Please stand as you are able and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Mr. Ruffin?
Here.
Mr. Trapp?
Here.
Mr. Scala?
Here.
Mr. Thomas?
Here.
Mr. Pitzer?
Here.
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Mr. Treese?
Present. Quorum being present, I'll call the March 18th meeting of the Columbia City Council to order. We have three sets of minutes to review and approve. Has everyone had a chance to review the February 4th minutes? Is there a motion to approve the minutes from the
approval.
February? Gentleman's made a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Trapp. All those in favor of approving the February 4th minutes indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
All those of contrary opinion, no. Seeing none, the minutes are approved. For the minutes of the February 18th meeting, has everyone had a chance to review those minutes? And are there any adjustments, amendments, subtractions, deletions,
move
corrections? Gentleman's made a motion to approve those minutes.
Second
by Mr. Trapp. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes from the February 18th meeting indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any of those contrary opinion, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. For the minutes of the March 4th super short meeting, are there any adjustments to the minutes as distributed? Seeing none, Mr. Scala.
Move the minutes for the super short meeting.
Approve the minutes of the super short meeting.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Trapp. All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any other contrary opinion? No. The ayes appear to have it. Ayes do have it. Are there any adjustments to tonight's agenda? I would like to move from the consent agenda B 5619 to old business so that we can consider an amendment. I would like to move R 3919 from the consent agenda to new business. Are there any other adjustments to tonight's agenda? Is there a third one?
Three.
I have a third amendment to offer on Bill 5519, but it's already under old business.
Okay. Then, no, I don't have anything to add.
Without objections, I would make a motion to approve the agenda as adjusted. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Scala. All those in favor of approving the agenda as adjusted indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone contrary opinion? No. The ayes have it. Moving on to boards and commissions. There are a number of opportunities to serve your city council and serve the city by dedicating your talents and skills to a volunteer board and commission. There are several opportunities this evening, including the Citizens Police Review Board. We have one vacancy and five applicants. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll on the first vacancy, please?
Mr. Ruffin?
Nicole Seaman.
Mr. Trapp?
Nicole Seaman.
Mr. Scala?
Nicole Seaman.
Mr. Thomas?
Tammy Gibson.
Mr. Pitzer?
Nicole Seaman.
Ms. Peters?
Tammy Gibson.
Mr. Trees?
Nicole Seaman, please. Congratulations. On the City of Columbia New Century Fund Board, there's a vacancy there with no applicants, and I would ask us to re-advertise. For the Commission on Human Rights, we have one vacancy for Brian Jones that moved out of town and out of state. Madam Clerk, for the vacancy, please, on the Human Rights Commission.
Mr. Ruffin?
Mindy Wurgis.
Mr. Trapp?
Mindy Wurgis.
Mr. Scala?
Leslie Adams.
Mr. Thomas?
Erin Holm.
Mr. Pitzer?
Mindy Wurgis.
Ms. Peters?
Mindy Wurgis.
Mr. Trees?
Kate Canterbury. And did
Ms. Wurgis receive four?
Okay. For the Public Transit Advisory Commission, there's one vacancy and two applicants. Madam Clerk?
Mr. Ruffin?
Amanda Hoffman.
Mr. Trapp?
Amanda Hoffman.
Mr. Scala?
Amanda Hoffman.
Mr. Thomas?
John Noller.
Mr. Pitzer?
Amanda Hoffman.
Ms. Peters?
John Noller.
Mr. Treese?
Amanda Hoffman, please. For the Tax Increment Financing Commission, I would like to appoint David Seaman to the term ending September 1st, 2022 with the consent of City Council. Is there any objection by Council to this appointment? Seeing none, motion or the appointment so made. For the Tobacco Retailer License Review Board, this was created under the ordinance that we passed at our last meeting. There's one, I'm sorry, Mr. Scala.
Yeah, just a comment. I took a look at the resume here. There was one application for this position. I certainly qualified, but I would feel a little bit more comfortable if we re-advertised for another session, if you will, and trying to be able to make a choice here.
Okay. Any objection to re-advertising and looking for more robust pool of candidates? Seeing none, so ordered. For the scheduled public comment, there are several opportunities to address City Council. Those that contact the City Clerk's office prior to the agenda coming out on Wednesday can speak at the beginning of the meeting for 5 minutes. Of course, we'll have public hearings and then an opportunity again at the end of the meeting. We have three such scheduled public comments this evening. Our first is Amy Flo Osborne. Good evening. Welcome.
Thank you. As you said, I'm Flo Osborne. I've first moved here in 1979, and I help provide social services. I am here to urge that the public transportation system be improved so that there are more routes and that it runs longer hours, more stops. And I know there is some work presently to move in that direction, but I'd like to further urge your consideration. First, I want to tell a couple examples of some people that I know who are affected by the bus system. One is a teenage girl who had to leave her home because she was a victim of physical violence, and she's being allowed to live with another relative. She wants to, but that's only a temporary condition. She wants to stay in her old school because that's her only form of social support right now and her only stability, but the person she's living with lives all the way across town from the school, so she takes the city bus to the school, then she has to work at night to try to pay her expenses. She's trying to get a place to live, and another subject for another night is we don't have any shelter for teenagers in town, so she's trying to save her money. Sometimes her bus is late to get the connecting bus, so that means she has to ride a taxi or Uber to get to work. She already has to take one of them to get home, so that means basically all of her money for working is going into transportation. So that's pretty hard for her. Another person I know of was wanting to do a day treatment for a substance abuse center, and the center was about 3.5 miles where they were living, but it took them 2 hours back and forth to get there, but they were motivated and they were able to do that. But I looked at some of the when the routes begin, and if you had a job that started at 8 o'clock, some of the routes that you wouldn't start, you couldn't get on till like after 6 o'clock, so a lot of people wouldn't be able to make it to work. And then a lot of people, especially starting jobs, have to work evenings or work on the weekends, and so it's really hard for, we're not supporting these people getting to work. And I feel the more that we did that, the less people would need social services. They would need less public housing, less food stamps. I know the city doesn't have to pay a lot of those expenses, but if we just put it all in one pot, it seems like providing public transportation would, you know, reduce our costs and give people more dignity and respect to actually be earning their money to make their own way of living. So I think that it would a way to address wealth inequality, and also other problems such as poverty and crime, or other problems related to poverty such as crime and blight could be helped in this way. And I just think it's the right thing to do. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very well done. Our next speaker will be Rebecca Shaw.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm here on behalf of several groups tonight. I am co-organizer along with Kate Canterbury of Como for Progress, and I have a letter that's been signed by 11 other organizations that I'd like to read for you. To our mayor, city council members, city leaders, and our uniformed officers, over many months, the public has asked both leaders of City of Columbia and the Columbia Police Department to adopt community-oriented policing practices. The council members responded with the resolution for community-oriented policing to adopt a department-wide community policing model. For the last year, citizens have waited in good faith for the release of the community-oriented policing report, a summary of community input and a direction for our community and police to work together toward the common goal of public safety. With the recent departure of both the city manager and the chief of police, we now proceed with renewed hope that new leadership will embrace the COP philosophy and instill in officers the belief that COP values can be practiced in their policing. In researching COP, we have come across several resources, one which states the community-oriented policing department recognizes that constructive action by police and community is always better than action by the police alone. It is the belief of the signed groups and individuals below that this statement reflects the very basic element needed for success of community-oriented policing in Columbia. The word buy-in has been thrown around in many of our discussions. One way to assure buy-in from officers is to make sure that leadership is first exhibiting the qualities and values of community-oriented policing. Interim Chief Jones has made strides in his first few weeks by displaying care and consideration for the public interest in policing. In discussions with officers, many seem to be ready for change. We would like to see this change take root in our community. We have to be aware of the influences on officers, positive and negative, from both inside and outside the department. One important part of helping to increase the public trust with officers is to make sure the images and languages associated with them make the public feel safe and that they reflect the philosophy of community policing. Along with Lieutenant Tate's discriminating tweets and the Boone County Sheriff's now removed video, we feel that recent posts like those made by the Columbia Police Officers Association are in poor taste and do not further our focus on community policing. Following CPA's own statement that their leaders hold ourselves to a high standard of professionalism, following Lieutenant Tate's posts, the group released an image on social media featuring three uniformed officers that states, "People sleep peacefully in their beds at night because rough men stand ready to do violence on their behalf." We hope city leaders and officers can see how a statement like this, as well as posts that highlight the embracing of toxic masculinity, calling to take the fight to them, and indicating that the public lies about interactions with police, can erode trust with the community and bring the warrior mentality of police to the forefront of the public's thinking. A police force that believes it is their duty to do violence rather than protect and serve is a force that this community does not want and has actively advocated against. The undersigned asks that city leaders make a public statement reiterating support for community-oriented policing and recommend the CPD and CPOA adhere to the same social media guidelines set for its officers. We also ask that you assist to arrange a facilitated meeting with City of Columbia, CPD, CPOA leadership, and community stakeholders to discuss why speech and social media content are important. We're ready to move this conversation forward in our community, and we believe these actions will help progress the discussion of community-oriented policing. Sincerely, Central Latino, Como for Progress, Faith Voices of Columbia, Mid-Missouri Fellowship of Reconciliation, Mid-Missourians for Justice in Palestine, Mid-Missouri Peaceworks, Minority Men's Network, Race Matters Friends, Social Action Team of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Columbia, Social Justice and Hospitality Team of Rockbridge Christian Church, and Veterans for Peace, the Charlie Atkins chapter. We would like to take a minute just to say that we're not here to point fingers at any one group. This is a discussion that's happening nationally right now. We want to start a conversation. We need to understand the strength of language and its effects on every individual. We want officers to know how they're portrayed by their leadership. We want the public to know that all officers are not represented by these images. Those in power in our community should see from all perspectives how these images and messages are portraying them. Is this helping or is this harming building our trust? Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. And our final speaker is Julie Ryan with the Como Safe Water Coalition.
Good evening. While Como Safe Water Coalition first began its efforts to eliminate chloramine as a disinfectant in our drinking water, we quickly came to realize there was another contaminant that needed to be addressed. We're talking about the added fluoride in our drinking water. And just to set the stage for compliance, we report fluoride in a three-year cycle. We reported it back on 2017 data. The number at that time was lower than what the average is in our wells. And we questioned that, and we were told by the city that they used a number for a compliance sample in January of 2015 when the plant was not adding fluoride due to delivery issues. And we kind of wondered why you would use a compliance sample when you weren't actually adding the fluoride that you tell the public you're adding. In 2017, the compliance sample for 2017 to 2019 was reported as 0.55, which is a jump from the 0.25 that was reported of parts per million. The reason we start with this is that on any given day, no one in the public knows what the fluoride level will be in the water. We understand the controversy over the risks and benefits of fluoride. We now know there are multiple studies that link fluoride to ADHD, loss of IQ when pregnant women are exposed in their babies, and hypothyroidism, especially in individuals who are iodine deficient. Our concern has always been that while attempting to improve the health of one subset of our population, we can be contributing to negative health impacts of others. Let's put it this way. Would you encourage giving a patient medication that has had no human clinical trial for safety or effectiveness? What about something the FDA has never approved for ingestion, something that is labeled as an uncontrolled use of an unapproved drug in drinking water? This is the industrial fluoride that we are putting into our water. This is hydrofluorosilicic acid, known as HFSA, and this is what Columbia adds to its water. This type of fluoride additive in water means that a substance is being used as a medication and is being administered at the same dose to every citizen, regardless of their weight, age, health condition, or additional medications being taken. Doctors ask patients about other medications they take before prescribing a new one. Pharmacists check for contraindications when filling a new prescription for a patient. However, we add industrial fluoride to our water in a vacuum, without knowing what the recipients on the other end may or may not already be taking or consuming through their food and drinks. HFSA is a waste byproduct of fertilizer production. It is not a pharmaceutical-grade product. In fact, studies have found it to contain other hazardous metals like aluminum and arsenic. Fluoride itself is categorized as a contaminant by the EPA in terms of drinking water. Naturally occurring fluoride is insoluble and is absorbed differently. HFSA is one of the most water-soluble forms used in industrial applications to remove lead. HFSA also is known to combine with chloramine to promote lead leaching. In the Journal of Dental Research, Clinical and Translational Research for March of this year, a report was published on dental fluorosis trends, where, according to lead author Chris Newrath, he quoted, "These extremely high rates are unprecedented, far beyond what are considered acceptable when water fluoridation was started 75 years ago." Data from the World Health Organization from 1970 to 2010 shows the overall decline in tooth decay with fluoridating and non-fluoridating countries. According to an article in the Scientific World Journal in 2014, currently only about 5% of the world's population consume artificially fluoridated water. Recently, Kentucky lawmakers have sponsored legislation that would allow communities to end water fluoridation. Most of Kentucky's communities do participate in water fluoridation. However, when looking at data collected, compared from 2001 to 2016, all but one region of the state showed an increase in untreated tooth decay in third and sixth grade students. The one region that did not show an increase stayed stable. If the water fluoridation has been so great, why the increase in untreated tooth decay over the 15-year period? Additionally, the recent crisis in Sandy, Utah, where a malfunction allowed undiluted HFSA to enter the drinking water system, is evidence of the dangers we can expose the public to. Even the best water treatment plant operators cannot always control equipment malfunction. Residents in Sandy became ill, and the highly corrosive HFSA leached lead and copper from the water distribution system. We believe Columbia is at a point where we can join other communities who do not fluoridate their water. Within Missouri alone, Springfield and Houston voted to end fluoridation in November 2018, Warsaw, Carl Junction, and Sullivan in 2015, Waynesville and Buffalo in 2014, in addition to multiple other Missouri communities in 2012 and 2013. O'Fallon ended fluoridation in 2010. We believe it is time to join our neighbors in Boone County, PWSD 1, and Ashland, who do not fluoridate their drinking water. This is not an attack on the dental community. It is a request to contemplate what has changed in regard to the scientific evidence behind water fluoridation. It is time to have a productive discussion of not who is wrong and who is right, but instead what we can do as a community to protect those who need dental assistance without injuring those who don't. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ryan. Moving on to public hearings. Madam Clerk, would you call public hearing 819 along with R40-19, the company resolution?
Public hearing 819 is the consideration of the FY 2018 Consolidated Annual Performance Evaluation Report, CAPER. Council Bill 4019 is a resolution approving the FY 2018 Consolidated Annual Performance and Evaluation Report, CAPER, authorizing the city manager to submit the document to the Department of Housing and Urban Development.
And do we have a staff report? Dr. Teddy, Mr. Cole.
All right, very good. So this is our 2018 performance report for how we expend CDBG and home dollars that we submit to HUD every year at the end of March. So 2018 is year four of our 2015 to 2019 consolidated plan. 2019 will be our final year. And if you remember back, you did the public hearing for our 2018 plan in June. It was June 18th of 2018, because typically we're waiting well into the federal fiscal year for our funding. And we're still waiting for our final allocations for 2019. So the report is on expenditures and accomplishments between January and December of each year, as that is the program year that we utilize for HUD, but it's due by this March 21st of 2019. So this is how our expenditures looked for this previous year during our program year from January through December. The unique part of this year was that we spent more in home dollars than we did in CDBG dollars, which isn't typical, but that was due to a couple of large projects through the Housing Authority that came in timing-wise, as well as our homeownership assistance program. We had the largest year that we've had since I've been here, with 40 persons served. So these are some of our significant accomplishments. Assistance to 40 homebuyers, homebuyer education provided to 167 attendees, services for independent living, had a big year with 43 projects completed, JobPoint completed training for 13 students. We completed 8 home-funded rental units at Oak Tower and Bryant Walkway 2 with the Housing Authority, which certainly includes many more units than that, leveraged with low-income housing tax credit dollars. And then we completed 6 homes over on Lynn Street and provided fair housing training to 142 professionals. So looking at how our 5-year plan lines up with accomplishments on what we've accomplished cumulatively, the green bars I have there are goals where we're ahead, and that would be our fair housing education professionals. Rose does that over the legal department, does a great job. Our homebuyer assistance and homebuyer education, as well as down our rental production. The Housing Authority has really helped us boost those numbers. And then our sidewalk projects are ahead of schedule. Places where we're behind is our micro-lending program, as well as our owner-occupied rehab program. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Any questions for the staff?
Was the micro-lending the CMCA project, or is there another project?
That was a general goal of doing micro-loan projects. CMCA has been the only entity that has applied for and gotten funds for those activities. They did one loan, I believe, back in 16 or 17, I believe.
And some of that was, wasn't there a recent activity that was, some of that was refunded?
Yeah, so that was general revenue dollars that was allocated for that activity as well. We pulled that back because they decided that wasn't a good use of funds for them. Because they struggled to get those funds out the door. So looking forward, I do have that they're likely going to apply for funds for their job training piece, and that might be a better use of funds for those efforts.
So that covers that one bit of deficiency. Is there any, you have any ideas with respect to the owner-occupied rehab?
We've seen a bit more interest in our smaller programs down there, the repair of existing housing. We have a small program that's $10,000 per home buyer. and a large program that's 35,000. So it seems like our minor home repair used to be down to around 5,000. Once we bumped that up, it seemed like there was a bit more interest in that minor home repair program because both those programs, people incurred debt on their house. So it seemed like people were a little more comfortable with the smaller program. And those the larger projects have taken a lot of time to get together, put together the whole work scope. So it seems like we've just had some interest in that smaller program.
Thank you. Any other questions for staff? If not, to open the public hearing. Anybody interested in making any comments with regard to this bill? Seeing no one, close the public hearing. Any comments by the council?
The poorly named document CAPER, again, kind of points to the excellence that we do in this area. I think we make good use of our federal pass-through dollars. We bring a sizable local commitment that far exceeds the required match because issues about affordable housing and development in our lower income areas are important to council. You know, some years past, we increased our administration amount, and we were able to add additional staff and bring some resources in-house. And I think that this is a great cooperation between nonprofits and the community, activities that we manage and operate under the city, and then things that we do through partnership. And I think it speaks well to our community. And it also points that we've only hit the tip of the iceberg as far as our solutions compared to the need that we have. We still have a high percentage of folks that are cost burdened. And so in addition to these dollars, you know, if we really want to address the fundamental economic equation of our community, we need to take on actions that both raise the wages of the people that live here, but also create more affordable housing options than we've yet to be able to achieve.
Any other comments? If not, that satisfies the requirement, I believe, for the public hearing, and then we can move on to. We took these up simultaneously, didn't we?
Yes.
So we can have the roll call vote on the.
Council Bill 4019, Mr. Ruffin.
Yes.
Mr. Trapp.
Yes.
Mr. Scala.
Yes.
Mr. Thomas.
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer.
Yes.
Ms. Peters.
Yes.
Mr. Trees.
Aye.
Moving on to old business. Madam Clerk, would you read from the Bill 5519.
Council Bill 5519 is an ordinance authorizing the issuance of special obligation refunding bonds, Series 2019, prescribing the form and details of the bonds and the covenants and agreements to provide for the payment and security thereof, authorizing certain actions and documents and prescribing other matters relating thereto, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
So these bonds are actually sold today, and the amendment sheet reflects the bonds and the final pricing that we achieved. Is that correct?
Correct.
Correct. Anything we had you'd like to add?
Yes. The financial advisors were very pleased with today's sale. Per the attachment, the net present value in savings is $1,075,034, and the present value savings on the gross cash flows is $2,145,351. So pretty good savings.
Over the life of those bonds?
Yes.
Yep. Let me make a motion that Council Bill 5519 be amended so that the amendment sheet is substituted for the original ordinance, and that exhibits A, B, and C that were attached to the amendment sheet are substituted for the original placeholder exhibits A, B, and C that were attached to the ordinance that was distributed.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Any discussion on the motion, on the amendment, rather? All those in favor of the amendment indicate by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Seeing none, the ayes have it. Now that we've adopted the amendment with the current pricing, is there anyone from the public that would like to be heard on Bill 5519? Is there any council discussion? What do we do with that savings? Is that just booked savings? Do we reflect that in the future for future projects? Do we reduce rates? Do we
roll? Put it in for future projects or use it?
Good. Any further discussion? Madam Clerk, on Bill 5519, please.
Council Bill 5519 as amended. Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Treese?
Aye. And from the consent agenda, Bill 5619.
Council Bill 5619 is an ordinance authorizing a development agreement with Fred Overton Development Incorporated to establish public infrastructure obligations relating to the development of Bristol Ridge Subdivision located on the east side of Bearfield Road and north of Gans Road, directing the city clerk to have a certified copy of the agreement recorded, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
And do we have a staff report, and can you walk us through the amendment and what the change reflects on the amendment?
Yes, sir. This is an item that follows up a preliminary plat of subdivision for the Bristol Ridge project. Council approved that preliminary subdivision along with zoning and annexation back in November of last year. This agreement is consistent with what the developer expressed he would do at that time. However, the agreement that had been signed included a small parcel that's actually owned by a homeowner association, the Bristol Lake Homeowner Association. It's a fraction of an acre, and it was not intended to make them a party to this agreement. So that legal description has been removed. There's two other legals that remain, and the recitals have been amended to reduce the overall acreage. I would not regard this as a substantive change. It's just one that's necessary so we don't have property that wasn't intended to be part of this agreement represented as part of it and that ownership. Try to answer any questions you may have.
Are there any questions for Director Teddy? Seeing none. I'll move that Council Bill 5619 be amended as set forth in the amendment sheet so that the attachment is the attachment under the amendment is substituted for the attachment that reflects the change of ownership, et cetera.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Scow. All those in favor of the amendment indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Seeing none. Is there anyone that would like to provide comment on Bill 5619 as amended? Seeing none. Any further discussion on Bill 5619? Madam Clerk, Bill 5619 as amended.
Council Bill 5619 as amended. Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Treese?
Aye. And Madam Clerk, would you read the bills on the consent agenda?
Items on the consent agenda include bills 5719, 5819, 5919, 6019, 6119, 6219, 6319, 6419, 6519, 6619, 6719, 6819, and resolutions 3619, 3719, and 3819.
And would you mind to read the bills again and then call the roll?
Bills 5719, 5819, 5919, 6019, 6119, 6219, 6319, 6419, 6519, 6619, 6719, 6819, and resolutions 3619, 3719, 3819. Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes, on all bills and resolutions.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Treese?
Aye. And moving on to new business, would you call R39-19 from the consent calendar that we move to new business?
Council Bill 3919 is a resolution authorizing an agency receipt agent authorization contract with Gunbusters LLC for the destruction of firearms seized by or surrendered to the police department.
Very much. Do we have a staff report?
Mayor Treese,
yes.
This one comes to you really as an amendment sheet, primarily because in the law department we fail to recognize that it's an ongoing request for authority to utilize Gunbusters for destruction of weapons. So what the amendment sheet actually does is create this ongoing authority for the department to utilize this as a service, because every time they submit the weapons, it will require a separate agreement to submit those. So,
anything you would like to add, Chief?
We're in the process of trying to purge things in our evidence unit that are long overdue to be purged, including multiple firearms, which are difficult to destroy in our current setup. What we've had in the past is two custodians cutting guns with a chop saw. costs us about $1,000 a year in time, a little bit unsafe and not the best documentation. So by contracting with this company, they provide that documentation, actually video the pulverization of firearms and send that back to us. So it's a pretty good method of doing that, and it costs us nothing.
Can you give us, if it's strategic information, don't convey it, but can you give me a sense of volume in the last year, last 10 years of number of confiscated?
You know, that's hard to say. I don't have that number. I can tell you that there are days that we'll seize a dozen firearms.
Got it.
We're overwhelmed.
And then they sit in the evidence room until the case is closed and then whatever.
Yeah, and they're bulky, difficult to store.
Got it.
Or just out of room.
So this would be an ongoing relationship, and I'll make the motion that we amend Council Bill R-3919 by changing the word contract to contracts, the word city manager to city manager and police chief, and contract to contracts from time to time, and contract to contracts to make it a more ongoing process.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Scala. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Is there anyone from the public that would like to be heard? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, on any further council discussion? On Madam Clerk, Resolution 3919 as amended.
Council Bill 3919 as amended, Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mr. Pitzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Treese?
Aye. And Madam Clerk, could you read the bills for introduction and first reading?
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 6919, 7019, 7119, 7219, 7319, 7419, 7519, 7619, 7719, 7819, 7919, 8019, 8119, and 8219. First reading.
Thank you. On to reports. Do we have report 2619? Street trees within the public right-of-way.
Yeah.
Mr. Teddy?
Yes, sir.
Good evening. This is a report where staff is requesting that council initiate a text amendment to our Unified Development Code in regard to subdivision requirements and street trees. We're finding a little bit of difficulty with the planting space within a local residential street standard. We've provided some cross sections that'll show you some of the dimensional differences between a local and what would be termed a major street, a collector or an arterial, in regards to that planting space. We've also shared a comment from Ameren, and that's a Mr. Burnett, who's an engineering and operations manager for Ameren, Missouri, who brought to our attention that with the natural gas line typically being behind the curb and within the grass planting strip, which is going to be 5 feet wide in a local residential case, there may be a conflict there with the dig and also the trees themselves. So we're asking that council consider referring this to the Planning and Zoning Commission for further consideration. We're not asking for your vote this evening, although be certainly happy to take comments if you have them.
Any discussion here? The next step, I take it, is to refer, should the council agree, is to refer this to Planning and Zoning Commission to look into this.
I think that seems wise.
So be it. We'll
Thank
do
you,
that.
Sir. Thank
yeah.
you.
Moving on, let's have report 2719, letter from the Public Transit Advisory Commission relating to transportation funding. Is there a staff report?
This is a commission of councils, and so they're writing you a letter.
Okay. So this is just
about
for
transit.
Informational yes. purposes only.
For you.
Then let's move on to, go ahead, Mr. Pitzer.
Well, I had a couple question? Of question or comments. a possible idea and then a couple comments that I wanted to, on this topic, so could do it later, but since we're on it, I figured I'd bring it up now. You know, one of the things that's come up quite a bit is the ending of Saturday service coming up this summer. So that seems to be certainly a priority for a lot of people. And looking at the transportation sales tax numbers from 2018, we wound up coming in at about, and I want to tack this on to what Councilmember Scala had asked for a couple weeks ago, and he had asked for some additional information. But it looks like we came in at about $11.8 million, which was about $300,000 over budget for 2018 on the transportation sales tax. And that gives us a higher baseline for this current year. So, you know, obviously we don't know where that'll come in, but there's potential that we could be over budget and surplus there as well. So a couple of meetings ago, we had the work session that indicated the limited Saturday service for the rest of this year would be roughly 74,000. For all of next year, it's somewhere like 148,000, something like that. And I don't know if that's what we need to commit or if we need to commit half of that and then there's federal matching for the other half. But that's another question you might look into. But you know, I would propose that we look at using the surplus in the transportation sales tax to fund the limited Saturday service, starting with the remainder of this year, and then when we get to the budget in the fall, potentially we'll have a better sense of surplus in that fund for this current year that could be applied to run that to fund that service for next year. So that amount would cover that, and then I also wanted to make a couple of comments. So if you could bring that back in the form of report when you bring back some of this other information that has been asked for, I would appreciate just some confirmation of that. But I wanted to make a couple of other comments as well about some of the requests for, you know, and some of the comments that have been made about the cutting of funding for public transit and, you know, the lack of resources that have been put toward transit. And I just wanted to make sure that it was clear that from the transportation sales tax, we've actually increased spending on transit by over $1 million over the past decade. That has been a larger increase than the amount spent on any airport spending. Since 2012, we've put a larger increase in dollar terms into transit than we have into our street maintenance program. Streets are consistently identified as the number one concern of citizens by a significant margin. You know, when we look at that that graph that breaks into quadrants, the items that are of high concern and of high dissatisfaction, street condition is always in that upper left quadrant. And at a couple of meetings ago, the report that was presented to us about the showing the condition of the streets around the city, you know, it was a very colorful mosaic showing just how pothole riddled and deteriorating all of our streets are. So I think that there is a potential solution toward the limited Saturday service, but it's a misnomer that we have been cutting funding for transit. And you know, just like all the other departments across the city, costs are going up, expenses are going up, and revenue isn't going up at the same rate. Just this year, the changes that we made to the pay plan increased costs for transit by about $98,000, just on the pay alone. And that same thing is happening in all the other departments. So, you know, there's no, you know, easy way out of this fix, but we have dedicated a lot of resources to it. We continue to dedicate a lot of resources to it. Cost of prioritizing other areas that citizens consistently, by wide margins, have said is their number one concern. And you know, I would, if these numbers come out the way I think they will, you know, and we look at using that surplus for the Saturday service, I would say that we use the remainder of that surplus funds to go and put that into the annual street maintenance program, and do what we can on that front. So,
I like the parity you're recommending with some more going into street maintenance. I think it makes the connection, particularly this time of year with pothole season, to invest in some of that. And to the extent we're running behind on that Saturday service, that kind of ties us over there. Mr. Scala?
Yeah, let me make just a few comments. I'm very warm to the idea about any surpluses, and I think this ought to be tied in with the report from what we were asking about. My whole point or my evolution in thinking along these lines and having to suggest that 2.5% in terms of transportation sales tax that covers the airport transit and roads, and we usually, and at this point our policy is a 50% road contribution, about 25% each for those other two categories, was just an attempt at 2.5% from each one of those. It was just a temporary attempt to try and reach balance here between some very high priorities and share the pain amongst these various funding mechanisms and various categories so that no one took too much of a hit, but that we could accommodate something, including the Saturday service maybe, and I don't know what else because I haven't gotten the report back. But this was only a temporary measure because, as you mentioned, we are between a rock and a hard place here. We need additional funding in order to adequately service lots of these high-priority items. And I maintain that transit is part of the transportation system, as is the airport, as are the roads. I mean, even the buses use roads. But I would like that information that comes back to find out how much money this could potentially yield each percent that we cut, for example. And I would also like the report to contain this thing that we've been talking about for now probably well over 10 years, to try and go to smaller vehicles. I know you can't do that overnight, and there are lots of reasons that the argument has gotten in the way, but we can at least start to transition. Those, you know, the buses that we provide for disabled transit at this time, is they're very attractive and so on. I think it'd be very service. That doesn't solve the problem about having a number of drivers and so on and some of these other issues. But that was my attempt at trying to get at least an incremental change towards this. And ultimately, in terms of the roadways, God knows, in 2015 we tried with a development fee increase to try and increase the funding for roads. We're going to need to revisit that at some time. And some of my friends at the chamber and in the development community, I know, are on board with this. So at some point, we're going to have to do this, probably within the next year or so. I suspect that we can recover this balance, in part, at least, at that time. But I would like this information and get all this stuff together so we can make a decision.
Mayor?
Sure, Mr. Glasscock.
And I received the information today, Mr. Scala, and so I'll give you some, and I'll share this information with you later. The 1% transportation sales tax generates about $113,900. And so if we look at a reduction in the street funding at 2.5%, that generates about $150,000. 2.5% of the airport's about $47,000. So you would put about $197,000 into transit if you did it that way. Okay. And so, you know, to your point, Mr. Pitzer, we could probably do Saturday service this year. We could extend that. It costs us about $50,000. We have over $1 million in reserves. We could use, you know, 50 from that if y'all wanted to do that. That's not a problem. I'd kind of need to know something pretty quick because we're getting ready to reprint the schedules and everything. So if we're going to take Saturday out, you know, we don't want to waste $10,000 reprinting schedules either.
So if we were talking about Saturday schedules, we'd be talking about half, so every hour and a half running?
90-minute headways, I believe it is.
Nine?
Yeah.
As opposed to 75? Oh, 45. Never
45,
mind.
45, yeah.
It's right. Not even late yet.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so 90, okay.
The other thing we could do, I mean, if you want to assimilate all the transportation dollars, you should also pull in, you know, some of the other disincentives to riding the bus. I mean, your parking meter fees and some of the parking fees, things like that, and see if there isn't a way that all of that is working in tandem to fund a robust system.
Sure, and I was thinking about this just the other night. I know this is not a popular view with lots of the airport folks, but this idea about parking for at least the permanent lots that we have. Certainly not for the gravel ones. We're in transition. We're trying to build a terminal, and there's lots of demands. But I think I mentioned on a recent trip on my way down to New Orleans, you have to take the train in Carbondale, Illinois, and they have a municipal lot right next to the train station, the Amtrak station. Does not have fancy gates to monitor compliance with a nominal $2 a day fee. It's a start. I don't think, you know, I don't want to ask for too much. I want to share the pain a little bit, as little as possible, but at least make a step in the right direction so that the public understands that we understand that this really is a priority, particularly for those of the least among us who really need some of this help. So that is another part of this equation, I think, that we need to evaluate, but perhaps we could move even quicker on this restoration of the Saturday service without too much difficulty, and I think that would be an important message to send to a lot of folks that have been talking to us lately.
Any objection to restoring the Saturday service for the rest of this fiscal year while we continue to work on the route changes and adjustments in the public hearing process?
I support doing that.
Yeah, I would support that also.
How about a...
You have a preferred solution?
Well, I would be interested in seeing an appropriation of the fiscal year 18 surplus from the transportation sales tax to fund the Saturday service for the rest of this year, and then for the rest of it to go into the annual street maintenance for this year.
Yeah, I'd like to see the pothole fund, if you want to call it that, be part of that solution as well.
We'll bring that back.
And if you want to put the parking meter aspect in it, yeah, you could plug a pothole every time someone
that's
puts
true.
A quarter in the meter.
Well, we have 2,000 meters on the street, so you know, you divide that up. It doesn't take much.
Right. All right. Thank you. General comments from the public, council, and staff. Is there one from the public that would like to be heard? Okay, seeing none.
Man, you got to get up here fast.
Can't be sitting on the back row, Eugene Elkin.
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Range Line. I was waiting for all other parties. The idea of discussing the transportation, I am very proud to hear something's happening. We need to apply empathy in that area. Because I've been watching this, tried to ride the bus, trying was back some 14, 15 years ago. I couldn't figure out anything about anything solid. If you get to put in your mind to this, I've got a job to be at, but you know what? The bus routes have been cut. I can't do that job anymore. I have to quit that job, whoever I'm speaking of at this moment. We have got to figure out how to make it 24/7, as we've had many a person come forward. Is it time to start looking at a certain pot of money that feeds the transportation directly? Nothing else comes out of that pot but transportation. We do know we're denying the disabled by wheelchair, the disabled, I stand in front of you. I don't necessarily lean on the bus system, but one day soon I may very well get forced to. I would like to see something I could count on by living in Columbia. Hey, they got a great bus system. Do you realize the PR that could bring in on revenue? It's something really to think hard and heavy. We've had all the griping, but now how about solutions, Mr. Glasscock, as you look into the books? The potholes, I am a victim currently. It has cost me money. So does that mean it's a priority? Yes, and I'm glad to hear it tonight because your turn is coming. I thought it was a major problem. It turns out the car was out of balance. So when you're hitting choke holes, you're bringing on damage to your vehicles in different ways. It wasn't an actual tire that I thought had gone bad, but all tires were out of balance. It's only a week later, and I'm getting ready to go back tomorrow. The water subject. On late night radio, when the lady was speaking under SPC 2019, more and more states are trying to go after the stopping of fluoridation. If this is tied into ADH, let's get to the bottom of it, guys. Our police, the gentleman who's just stepped up to be the police chief, what if you all just solved some of his issues by pulling fluoride from the water? My last question, are you controlled by the state of Missouri as to regulating fluoride? Can anyone answer the yes or no question?
We're not.
No.
Thank you very much. I never trap cell phone.
Mr. Calloway.
Steve Calloway, 3900 Sherman Court here in Columbia. I couldn't let it go by without just mentioning that some of the community groups that I've been working with, I'm working with the United Way on their financial stability and economic mobility project that has involved going out and visiting with community organizations on site visits and that sort of thing, and trying to respond to grant requests. We visited Job Point, we visited a number of different facilities, and in the summit that we had back in November, transportation came up, and basically the issue that it ties to is what several folks have been mentioning already, that is that the businesses say they can't find employees. Employment is at the lowest rate in some time, maybe history. Employers can't find employees. The employees that may be able to be employed can't get to the jobs that are available for them. And so when things change, when things aren't available for them, it creates an issue when employees can't show up for work. That's one piece of it. And it ties, of course, into the financial stability piece of it, because if people can't keep a job, they can't become financially stable, nor can they experience economic mobility in moving up that chain. Everybody doesn't have a car. And so being able to get to a job, maybe people who don't have a license or have a license suspended, might have to depend on the transportation system. Similarly, we've talked about some other things. So I want to just throw out for you that, you know, we talk about, so there's the term, right, throwing money down the hole, right, that sort of thing. So maybe in thinking about the transportation system, some of the ideas we've talked about, again, not that any one idea has stuck, but it's just the idea of looking more at the transportation system and figuring out what kind of transportation system is needed to meet the needs that transportation is calling for. In other words, you know, a bus that goes at a certain period of time just might not be it. We talked about Uber. United Way had a trial that they were doing with the Uber folks of trying to get folks to it. Maybe smaller vehicles that get things to people. Maybe businesses and working with them to provide transportation. Because anything we do also transportation-wise, so organizations that have different shifts, you may never be able to provide bus in the normal traditional way to get people to jobs that operate on different shifts, second shift, third shift, whatever it might be. So I would just encourage you to think more broadly about how you can meet the needs of Columbia's population around transportation and not get stuck on we've got to have the buses in the normal way that we think about it. So
I agree with you, Steve, and I appreciate your comments. And do you have a sense of how many of those constituencies that need that service have a smartphone? I mean, I think about, you know, GPS and how to do the you know, on-demand transit services that other cities do, but at some point that low-income population doesn't have access to an app that allows you to order the bus or a smaller vehicle or us to do Uber vouchers or whatever it may be to find the best solution at the right time.
Sure. That's not my area of expertise at all. I can think of a bunch of issues. You know, if you got a minute phone, right, you're out of minutes. And
sure, got it.
Can't access the internet stuff that you need to be able to get that. You know, so yeah, I don't know. I know we've worked with, you know, Stacey Button, you know, we with the financial stability, she was part of that group we were working. there are lots of things that have been talked about, and I don't know if there's any one solution or who's really the best person to kind of take that on, but I have heard it from multiple sources. Randy Cole, when talking about affordable housing.
Oh, it came up at the CID business loop, I mean, town hall and every focus group there as well. Yeah. Real quickly, if you want to yield
Steve,
to a question.
I also want to mention just broadly, and at the mayor's behest, as a matter of fact, we looked into some possibilities about some of the businesses on Paris Road and so on for some of the shift work, and there was an ongoing conversation for years now with the university and trying to get them, and all of these things together. I mean, it's a real intractable problem, and I think we certainly need to get somewhere with it, but I think it's going to, at least for the short term, it's going to have to be a bit incremental, and I appreciate some of the other contributions of other people here with their ideas and so on to get some movement on this issue. So
I will give a second to the pothole thing, too.
Yeah, that's a problem, too. Yeah. So anyway, thank you for your interest.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Steve. Any further public comment? I was going to say council had 2 minutes, but now we're already 3 minutes over. So any final council comments for this evening? Ms. Peters.
I just have questions about the transportation. I know that Taxi Terry has some vehicles that are handicapped accessible, wheelchair accessible, and I'm wondering if anyone uses those. So I don't know if there's any way just to touch base with them.
So, we did a grant. We did a competitive RFP.
Right.
And I think they had problems with their pipeline. I think we did 3 grants, but they could only fulfill one at a time. But I'm wondering, as part of that grant, was there a reporting process there? And they have to make that vehicle available. They can't do, non-medical emergency transport with it. They can't do other things with it. I'd be curious about that, too, how often it's getting used. And they have to offer that fare at the same price as they offer a normal fare. So no loading fee and no,
So, as we look at the different transportation options, that as I was sitting here, I just thought, I wonder, because we also hear that from the paratransit people, that they can't come to the meetings or that they, have trouble getting around. And I just wondered if they'd been able to avail themselves of this or if that was working. The other issue, I guess now, if United Way is looking at Uber, I'd be interested to know what they found, because at some point it might be something where we really want to start addressing vouchers for Uber as opposed to having buses drive around town if they're really not used that much. So. And finally, I guess I do appreciate Mr. Pitzer and Mr. Scala coming up with how can we continue Saturday service? What can we look at to try and not make this quite as painful as it's going to be anyway? As we get the
Mr. Thomas.
Yeah, and I also appreciate my colleagues' attention to this particular concern. It sounds as though we may be able to keep Saturday service going through the end of this year and hopefully find a way to keep it going into the fiscal 2020 year, because without it, a lot of people are literally homebound for the entire weekend, including people with disabilities who have access to paratransit at the moment on Saturday but will not do so if we and fixed route service on Saturday. Also want to thank the Public Transit Advisory Commission for their letter explaining the need to find a solution to the budget problem for transit, and a lot of other groups that have been voicing this concern. I do want to urge us not to look at this as trying to fix up the system to provide a transportation service for people who don't own a car. I think we have to think a lot bigger than that. If you look around the world at good transit systems, where they work well is where a lot of people use them. It's not where most people use a car, and there are a few people who don't have enough money or who have disabilities or who are too young or too old that need the transit service. So I think we got to create a much bigger vision for transit. I really like Steve's idea of having a broad vision. It's not just about buses. It includes ride-hailing services. It includes the flex route idea that we talked about. It includes taxi cabs.
But we really have to look at what are the needs in Columbia, what are the needs of the business community, what are the needs of the low-income community, what are the needs of the disabilities community, what are the needs for our climate action plan, what are the needs for our Vision Zero plan, what are our needs for public health benefits. It's actually remarkable how many benefits the community accrues from some kind of well-designed shared transportation program. So just want to kind of throw my support behind the idea of a big conversation over the next 12 months or so to come up with a vision and some strategies that we can afford and that can provide the transportation system that we really need as a community.
I want to talk about the strategic plan focus areas, specifically the second ward focus area, from a couple of different angles. Had our most recent neighborhood meeting, and we were kind of in the fourth year of our three-year strategic plan because we've put off the process, we've done the data gathering. So realistically, if we're looking at bringing on a permanent city manager position in June, you know, there may be possibly as much as maybe even 2 months delay for that person to start. If we hire from outside, they're going to take some time to have to get up to speed. So I'm feeling like January of 2020 might be kind of the soonest that, as we run into the holidays, that we are going to look into that. So I want their staff that are overseeing the strategic plan to think about communicating and planning with our neighborhood partners who are engaged in this process and have expectations and an ongoing process about those kind of time frames to make sure that we're not just going through the motions of meeting with people. There are some things that are better not to do at all than to not do well, and I think meeting with struggling folks and engaging them in a process is one of those things, and we do have folks engaged, and so just want to make sure that we have clear direction to the staff that this is a live process that's ongoing, and to maybe think about that kind of a time frame. And I can see how that's evolved and how Mr. Glasscock was thrown into the hot seat. Mr. Mathis was pretty hands-on on that, on those kinds of projects. And we have all of the routine business of the city that is complicated and an unending series of crises that have had to be dealt with in a short period of time. So I mean no criticism or disrespect, but I think we ought to bring some additional focus to those efforts. And then to complicate that matter, in my own second ward, after a long period of beautiful calm, it has been disrupted with a number of shots fired incidents and shootings. Talking to the folks in the neighborhood, it's very much their position that these are folks who are coming from outside of our neighborhood and shooting up our neighborhood. And the neighborhood surrounding Auburn Hills. So I want to talk about kind of two things. One, I'd like to have a meeting with Glenn Cobbins, who's our neighborhood specialist, who has had as far as people paid by the city, has his fingers on the pulse of what's going on. And I have my own connections in that neighborhood, and for people who are knowledgeable or peripherally involved in some of these kinds of things. But I would like to just I don't want to jump way down the chain, but I would like to meet and compare notes just to see if there's anything that we can do on the neighborhood side to cool out or work through dispute resolution or bring this to a pause on that end. And then from the policing front, I'm satisfied that the police have a good, this sometimes get lost, but the police have a good record about closing violent cases and bringing perpetrators to justice. And there's a role of enforcement and that kind of targeted police work where we have information and facts that point us in a particular direction. And I'm pleased that the Interim Chief Jones's approach is those kinds of focused deterrence kinds of methods versus saturation patrols in an area, which becomes onerous on people who just drive through those areas, who support people in those neighborhoods, who live in those neighborhoods, because the vast majority of them you know, the streets of Bodie, Greensboro, there's a little triangle there, and I've knocked every single door on that street, and not during campaign season, but just to talk about shots fired incidents and solutions. And I've, you know, and those saturation patrols are kind of a random net that have been an onerous burden on folks. So I'm not asking for that, but I think one aspect that we had looked at, and I kind of set aside because we had 18 months of incredible calm, but we were pushing towards a camera. And I think we looked at a portable camera system, which is around $40,000. And that, I think, could be, it would be nice if that was part of our policing repertoire. And I would like to see if there's support for council reserves. Maybe we can bring this back in the form of a report with pricing. But I believe they were coming in around $40,000. I think we have that in council reserves. I would never, as a non-policing professional, try to tell the interim police chief how to spend his limited police budget and balancing all of the needs of the entire city. But if we can bring additional resources to that, that would give an additional tactical option, because to come out and shoot up Bodie Drive, you have to go down the corner of Edenton and Bodie. And this is only kind of a probably a stopgap need, because we're going to build a police station on the next block, which, you know, it's going to be hard to drive by the police station to come and shoot up. But it's a real problem right now, and it's not even summertime yet. And it seems like KMIZ is calling me every week to do the shots fired on Bodie Drive story. And it's hard to stay optimistic the third time you do that interview in March. When you think that weather is one of the biggest determinants on these kinds of activities, and it's not even summer yet. So if we could look, if it's a possible solution to look towards that, I think that these are the kinds of things of why we have a contingency fund or reserve money for council priorities. And this is not I'm not a camera person. It's not where I go to. But it's something, that idea that people had in the neighborhood, and I went out and I knocked on every single door in the affected neighborhood, and I found people widely in support, and Tim Teddy was there to verify that I vetted this idea again at the last community meeting. People brought it up and said, hey, whatever happened to it? And I was pushing it, but then good old-fashioned community policing really took care of that, and I think the community, the strategic plan efforts really brought this high level of calm for a long period of time. But these are idiosyncratic events driven by a few actors making bad decisions, and there isn't, you know, much that you can do if you're not that person pulling the trigger. But I think that might be a deterrent to know that we're going to be able to capture license plate information when you come in and shoot that neighborhood up. And then it would allow us to move it to other areas, as, because this is not, it's someday going to be another council member's turn to be in the KMIZ spotlight.
I'm just about to make a comment about this.
So there, that I would like to see the cost of that, how quickly we could get something like that implemented, and see if there's support for council reserves. I think a report would give us a chance to discuss that.
Mr. Scott.
Yeah, I had just one item, and now I have two. At your suggestion, I think it's a larger conversation than just council reserves or contingency funds that the council has for these kinds of things. I mean, I'll see your $40,000 camera and raise you two or three more. I talked to Glenn Cobbins at the NAACP meeting just the other night, and he said you have some real problem areas in the third ward. Two of them, Whitegate, and he was also talking about Boyd. There's some issues on Kelsey next to Demerit. I think this is a bigger conversation than just a camera. And I think you deserve your camera, because I think that may be a potential solution, and maybe cameras are a solution. But I think it's going to have to be a bigger conversation here within the context of the police department. So I'll put in my chit for being a piece of this conversation as well, because on the north side we have some issues when it comes to shots fired. The other issue that I just wanted to talk about just briefly had to do with Ms. Ryan's presentation about fluoride. I served on the drinking water task force that made some recommendations about the water drinking water plant and its capacity issues and chlorine or remediation and so on. And she was a part of that group as well. That group took that discussion very seriously a while back, about a year ago, I guess it was now, after getting quite a thorough review from the Board of Health with respect to fluoride. Now, there have been some communities that have shifted their thinking, if you will. As far as I know, we have not yet around here, and that that recommendation was forthcoming from both the drinking water task force, and it was endorsed by the Board of Health initially upon their recommendation to that task force. So perhaps we need to continue this conversation. I'm not unwilling to do that, but I just want to make sure that people understand that this was a rather one-sided presentation of a particular view.
I was not going to say anything, but I just want to comment. I don't want to lose the opportunity to have an authentic community policing engagement here with Bodie Drive, because I think your concerns are well-founded and much needed. I also don't want to give Chief Jones a piece of equipment that he doesn't want. One of the things that, because I don't know if he does or not, one of the things that we did last summer when there was a spike in gun violence downtown was to bring the downtown unit together along with downtown business owners, and we had a very productive conversation about what the choke points were, what was provoking this issue, what those business owners were willing to do with respect to a camera on their building, which is a lot easier to do in the private sector than it is with government imposing surveillance on its own people, which I think has some issues. Better lighting downtown, and I've driven through that area as well. You don't have the same density of stakeholders there, but I do think you have people that care about that neighborhood, and I'm wondering if maybe we draw a bigger circle around that a little bit and at least have that same dialogue to see. And you may very well be right. It may be the camera that's the solution there. There may be other solutions, though, that I'd like to get a bigger dialogue there than that.
And to that point, a few years back, we had a huge discussion about downtown, the sidewalks, surveillance cameras. At that time, the city council, all of us, endorsed the idea of the surveillance cameras that we have in some of the garages and so on and on public buildings. And we were willing to help the private sector with some of their needs for cameras if that were the case. But there was a huge public discussion about whether or not it was legitimate to have public surveillance on public sidewalks and public streets. We probably would revisit that with this conversation, but I think it's worth, you know, bringing up and looking at some of these options.
And there's other technology there as well. I just think let's don't forfeit the opportunity to have that larger discussion.
However, if you're going to have that discussion and the fact that they're having this kind of problems with shots fired, is this a conversation that you need to then have in the next 7 to 10 days?
I would say.
You know, like you need to move it along, not decide we're going to have it in the middle of the summer.
I would suggest, since it's your ward, just get the conference room upstairs and pull some stakeholders together with John's permission, the command staff, or that beat staff, and just see what those solutions might include.
Yeah, I'm fine with that approach, as long as it's something that's moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's going to move forward faster than bringing back a resolution or bring back a report. And I think it worked for downtown as well.
And then I would be supportive of cameras if that's what this group...
I would be too, yeah.
Because, yeah, something that helps...
It depends.
You can say that. I would be in favor of it.
And it may be the same streetlight solution that we're doing, you know, downtown. There may be other things. So. Okay. Any objection?
What I'm going to do with the rest of the evening.
Las Margaritas just opened.